Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
It's a Friday. This is the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening, live in Los Angeles. iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. Jamie Maggio joining me again. Three straight days on the Herd. Great to have you in. So here we go, Jamie. We have an NFL game last night. It was on Fox. It was awful. Hard to watch, right? Nick Foles struggled. Tyrod Taylor got hurt. Baker Mayfield, blah, blah, blah. Let's start with this. I know what you're thinking this morning. Oh, Colin's just going to rip into him. I mean, Baker Mayfield had a red zone pick. Ooh, that is a no-no. Baker Mayfield, 49.3 quarterback rating. Woo, that's terrible. Five series, one field goal for Baker Mayfield. Those numbers, those are not very good numbers, and I don't care at all about numbers. He was a number one pick is the number I'm interested in. When you're a number one pick, I want you to be a Maserati, not a Mazda. Baker's a Mazda in the NFL. He looked overwhelmed physically. Doesn't have a great arm. Couldn't outrun a lineman. Nothing wrong with a Mazda. I've driven a Mazda. I like Mazda. But you pay $85,000 for a car. That's a number one pick. You pay $85,000. You bragging about the cup holder? Honey, we got cruise control. Honey, we got power steering. You paid 85 grand, brah. You better be able to have automatic start. When you're making coffee in the kitchen, you push your key fob, that baby starts. So when you walk out in Cleveland weather, it is warm and toasty in that car. You better have sensors on the front and back. You better have a large display screen. You better have those large black rims. That's what $85,000 is. $85,000, number one pick. That's what Cam Newton is. That's what Andrew Luck is. That's what Carson Wentz, a number two pick, looks like. Okay, that's my whole point. The only number I care about is he's a number one pick. If you don't get wow moments from your quarterback in the first time you see him on a football field, then you made the wrong pick. Then take a pass rusher. Take a running back. Okay, I can make an argument. Saquon Barkley's not a number one pick, but you're going to get wow moments from him. That guy that Denver got, Bradley Chubb, you're going to get some wow moments. That's what you get with a number one pick. You pay $85,000 for a car, don't brag about a cup holder. You're all race. Your standards are so low in Cleveland, you're racing to Twitter. Ooh, look at that slant pattern. That's the minimum. That's not what you brag about. If you pay $1,200 for a hotel room, I better get a jacuzzi on a balcony overlooking either the Pacific or the Atlantic Ocean. If I pay $1,270 for a hotel room, I'm not going to go, hey, honey, we got free HBO. That's the minimum. You get that for $150 a night. Maybe even Showtime. Maybe even Netflix. Come on, man. This is my whole point on Baker Mayfield. That number one pick has got to be wow. Now, his career may not last forever because he gets injured. Maybe he's not as great as everybody thought he would be, but a number one pick is a wow pick. Like, when you watch the games, last night, Fletcher Cox treated Baker Mayfield like a stuffed animal. He was a little tiny. Could have fit him in his glove compartment. That's what I said about Baker Mayfield. He's going to be fine in this league. You're going to win games with Baker Mayfield. But is there a big gap with Baker and Tyrod Taylor? Does anybody think Tyrod Taylor would have been a number one pick? Anybody think Case Keenum would have been a number one pick? No. I like Teddy Bridgewater. He's not a number one pick. You got to give me big arm. So, I mean, I think what's happened in Cleveland is that Cleveland Brown fans' self-esteem is so low. Their standards are so low. They just want a car that runs, that doesn't stall on the freeway driving to work, that lasts the entire lease. But when you watch Carson Wentz and Deshaun Watson, you are getting wow moments for those young guys. I mean, Carson Wentz, when he came into this league, they played him in one preseason game in Philadelphia, then they never played him again. And then he opened up week one, 2 touchdowns, 270 yards, and they won. I mean, they put him on the shelf. They're like, here's Carson Wentz. Holy good Lord. Never played him rest of the preseason. When you draft a guy number one like a Carson Wentz or a number two like a Carson Wentz, I want wow. They draft Carson Wentz. They were the Pitts. They were reeling. 2 years later, he's borderline MVP. He's in the Super Bowl. Remember what Bucky Brooks said on the couch here? Remember what Bucky Brooks said a couple days ago on the couch? Here it was.
When you take someone in the top 10, for instance, you've talked about Baker Mayfield being number one overall and the expectation, the standard is different. When you take somebody in the top 10, the expectation is that guy is going to be the best at his position within the first 2 to 3 years of his career. He's going to be a top three or top four player at his position.
Do you see that with Baker? No, you don't. You are literally rushing to Twitter because he completed a slant pattern. Congrats on the cup holder. Congrats on free HBO. Have higher standards. Let me shift to this. Tom Brady's trainer, Alex Guerrero, banned from the team plane a year ago. Well, is back on the team plane. Let's see. In the last year, Tom Brady said, Jimmy Garoppolo, I want him out of town. They trade him. Tom Brady said, OTAs, that's for everybody else. I'm going to skip them. Alex Guerrero, we're going to set a precedent. I get my guy in the plane. Win, win, win. Folks, this is sports in 2018. Tom Brady should get all of those. He should get all of those. We give NBA stars those. We're not going to give the greatest football player in the league one of those. Tom Brady has earned the right to special treatment. We give special treatment on Wall Street. We give it in politics. We give it in corporate America. We give it in the NBA. Whoa. We don't give it to the best football player in the last 10 years in America? He has earned it. He's not a guy that doesn't put in the time. He's not a guy you can't trust. He's not a guy that blows up locker rooms. When you've had power your entire life, it's hard to surrender it. The NBA has a much easier time allowing stars special treatment because the NBA has always been a players' league. So coaches don't walk in with the fist and the gavel. The NFL, though, no guaranteed contracts, has always, always run the league through its coaches and GMs. But the world's changing. Players want to talk politics. Players want to be empowered. Players want to have massive charities. Players go to play with other players. Players leave the town they grew up in. Players chase not just money, but rings and community. Why is the NBA and its fans so comfortable with that? And why is the NFL and its fans so uncomfortable with it? The NFL, it's 2018. Tom Brady, it's like, hey, Jimmy Garoppolo, get him out of here. LeBron could do that. OTAs, all pass. LeBron could do that. Trainer, get him in the plane next to me. LeBron could do that. You know, when the stepdad or the dad rules the family with an iron fist, my way or the highway, and then his son gets a job and does really well, maybe in tech, and by 24 years old, he makes more a year than dad's made in the last 10. And he doesn't have to listen to dad. Dad looks old and out of place, kind of silly. Everybody kind of whispers about dad. Bill Belichick's figured it out because Bill Belichick's really smart. Bill Belichick let him skip OTAs, didn't make a big deal out of it. Bill Belichick let him put Alex Guerrero right back on the plane and has not made a big deal out of it because Bill Belichick's smart. This is the minimum for the greatest football player that has played this game in 15 years. There has been no more impactful, important player. Even players, NFL Network does a poll every year. Players vote Tom number one. This year, players voted Aaron Rodgers, like, if I recall, like 8 or 10. This is not pampering, by the way. Tom Brady is not being pampered. This is called extending your career. I know you're looking at it thinking, wins for Tom, in your face, Belichick. No. This is 2018. This is what the best player in a league, including the NFL, should be allowed to get. A top trainer on the plane, a threat at quarterback instead of a draft pick to help the great quarterback, and he should not have to go to OTAs, nor should that guy ever have to play in preseason, though Brady wants to because he's got a bunch of new receivers. These are not outrageous claims. These are not outrageous asks. It's 2018. Give Bill Belichick credit. He's figured it out.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Jason Whitlock and I used to always argue about this. He's like, Nick Foles, you got that guy's going to challenge Carson Wentz. And I'm like, no, he's not. Carson Wentz is a world-class talent. Carson Wentz is changing the league. Carson Wentz is going to be all-time stuff. Nick Foles is like a great backup. He's a C-plus guy. You can put him in as a spot starter. He's been terrible in the preseason. He was terrible against New England. He was terrible last night. But his career numbers, he's an 87 passer rating guy. He's won 22 games. He's lost 17. He completes about 60%, which is a minimum in this league. He's got 60 touchdowns and 30 picks. He's a guy. I mean, he's good enough to play in the NFL. He was a nice college starter. I mean, he had a great game in the Super Bowl. But he's been really good with Doug Peterson and for a brief time with Chip Kelly. Those are exceptional offensive coaches. But, I mean, a lot of guys, folks, a lot of NBA players have scored 28 points in a game. Kobe Bryant did it every night, being double-teamed, being trapped, being game-planned against. Kobe Bryant did it every night for 15 years. A lot of guys score 28 occasionally every other week. Roger Maris hit 61 home runs in baseball once. It was a record that stood for decade after decade after decade after decade until the steroids. But Roger Maris was never a 300 hitter. He had a great year. There was a guy in baseball named Adam Kennedy that I think won the ALCS MVP, had three homers in a game. Adam Kennedy never hit more than 13 in a season. He had a great series. There's a big difference between having a great Super Bowl and being a great quarterback. Carson Wentz is a great talent and a great quarterback talent with a great arm and great size and great legs. Nick Foles is a guy who had a great Super Bowl and has had a couple of great months. He's not a great quarterback. There's no battle for supremacy here in Philadelphia. You don't fall in love. Remember when LeBron got all those new players? Remember at the trading deadline where the Lakers made a trade and that first night together they were great? And a month later, it's like Jordan Clarkson's $13 million a year. He can't play. A million people do this for a living. You can have a good segment. Everybody sounds good on Monday on a television show that talks sports during the NFL season. Try Tuesday in August. Okay, great is if Nick Foles is inconsistent. If you're great once a week, you know what they say about you in basketball? God, he's such a head case. You never know what you're going to get. That's what great once every 2 weeks is in sports. It's not a good word. It's a bad word. It's a word that gets coaches fired. God, you never know what you're going to get from the guy. He's totally inconsistent. That's what Nick Foles is. Carson Wentz, 4 to 5 games. Holy God, what is that? Okay, so the people fall in love. A restaurant can have a good night. Are they good every night? That's great. So when I watch Nick Foles, I'm like, yeah, that's Nick Foles. He has games like that. You know, I mean, before Chip Kelly came, he was done. He was thinking about retiring. And if the Eagles didn't get Doug Peterson, Doug Peterson's taking him to a new level. When he gets the right coach that uses some of his skills, he can succeed, but he's not special. You're not a guy you're building around. But again, he's made the NFL. He's made plays. But the difference between great and a guy is doing it every night. Think about Kobe Bryant. He's double-teamed every night, trapped every night, game-planned against every night for 18 years. He averages 28, gets 16 in his last game. Everybody in the league's trying to figure out how to stop Kevin Durant. 10 years in, they can't. LeBron can't stop him. That's great. When Kawhi Leonard was healthy, you're getting 24 a night in great defense. That's great. But you'll have nights when, you know, you watch an NBA game Tuesday in Denver, guy gets hot, hits back-to-back-to-back threes, ends up with 24 points. He's a guy. Just an inconsistent guy. Again, they're all pro athletes, so they're all amazing. But, you know, I don't know, the confusion with Nick Foles, I can't believe what happened last night. I can. I've watched him play every game. I watched him in college. This is what you get.
Hey, what's up? This is John Middlecoff from the 3-and-Out Podcast, brought to you live by the Colin Cowherd Podcast Network. If you like Colin's show, you'll like mine. I talk a ton of football. This week coming up, I talk about the rule changes, Josh Allen's budding stardom, and just how lucky the 49ers got with Jimmy G. You can listen to me wherever podcasts are found. Again, it's the 3-and-Out Podcast. John Middlecoff, that's me, brought to you by the Herd Podcast Network.
So the Rams will not play Todd Gurley in the preseason, and they may hold Jared Goff, their quarterback, out. And by the way, in Atlanta, Julio Jones not playing, and Drew Brees and Big Ben not playing, and Aaron Rodgers not playing much, and you know, finally the smart people in the NFL are realizing, what is the point of playing Jared Goff and Todd Gurley? Okay, they have these things in the NFL. There's no reason for the preseason. They have these things in the NFL called joint practices. Bill O'Brien had one a couple of days ago. He said, yeah, we just ran about 150 plays in 2 days in 100-degree heat. Yeah, that's pretty good work. In joint practices, here's a kind of a crazy thing. Nobody hits your quarterback. In joint practices, because you're just playing one team and it's not televised, coaches are willing to do all sorts of exotic packages they won't televise during the preseason. So you actually, I could argue, get more work done and nobody gets hit, you know, like your quarterback. It's amazing to me. There's five things in sports that I just don't get. That if you were dropped on this planet out of a spaceship and introduced to sports, here's the five things that make no sense. Number one, the NFL preseason. For the record, we're just 8 days away from Notre Dame facing Michigan. 19-year-olds, no preseason, no joint practice, massive practice limitations, multiple teenagers, and they'll do just fine. What is the point of the preseason? Last night, Cleveland, Philly, three guys got hurt. San Francisco, five guys got hurt. Minnesota had six guys get hurt. What are we doing here? They're called joint practices. You have grown men, veterans, 28. College football doesn't have it, with teenagers. And when Auburn plays Washington in 8 days and Notre Dame plays Michigan in 8 or 9 days, and those games mean more because if you go 0-1 in college football, it can ruin your season. It can upend your season. What are we doing with preseason? What are we doing? Finally, guys in this league, Brees, Ben, Rodgers, Goff, get them out of there. No reason to play. Here's number two. Major League Baseball, 162 games, an utter marathon, and then the playoffs start with a one-game playoff. What? So the whole thing about baseball is a marathon, and then when the game really counts, it's a 40-yard dash. So I prove all year I'm superior to you, and then because, you know, pitching matchups, I have to win a game late in the season to get in. I have to use a number two or a three starter. You get your ace, and you beat me even though, what? Major League Baseball, first of all, your season's too long. It should be 120 games max. But secondly, how do you have 162 games, many that don't matter, and when they finally do, it's a one-game playoff? I would be much more comfortable with a one-game basketball playoff. We do that in college. I would be okay with one-game football playoffs, but in baseball, baseball is not a one-game sport. One game doesn't mean anything. You've had Literally, they used to send a Major League Baseball All-Star team overseas to play in tournaments, and they would lose to a Japanese All-Star team. And they're not as good as our All-Star team, but in a game, one error, a pitching matchup doesn't work for you. That doesn't make any sense. Number three that doesn't make any sense in sports to me is the imbalance in college football schedule. It's absurd. In college football, in the SEC, Alabama has to only play 8 conference games, meaning they get to play another cupcake. But in the Big Ten or the Pac-12, you have to play 9 conference games. You may say to yourself, well, it's just one more game. You don't think it's an advantage not having to play Georgia one year, whereas Michigan has to play Wisconsin? You do realize in the Big Ten there's like 7 legitimate teams now at the top? You don't think it would be an advantage not having to play Ohio State, not having to play Michigan State on the road in East Lansing, not having to play Michigan, not having to go play Penn State on the road Saturday night? You don't think that would be an advantage? You don't think it would be a disadvantage if, oh, Nick, you just had to go to the road on LSU? Oh, next week you got to go to the road on Georgia. Oh, but no, you don't have to in certain conferences because you get a bye week or play Panera Bread. Come on, college football. 8 or 9 games for everybody in the Power Fives. Here's another thing in sports I don't get. How about this one? Fighting in hockey. Literally, you're dropped from a spaceship to the planet and you watch a sport. Can you imagine in any other sport? Hey, they dropped their gloves. There's a fist fight. And the officials are like, yeah, you guys go at it. Go ahead, LeBron, Kevin Durant. Keep throwing haymakers. Go ahead, J.J. Watt, Joe Thomas. You guys keep throwing haymakers. We'll just sit back here and watch it. What are you doing? I mean, it's absurd. I know non-hockey guy loves the toughness of it. Listen, hockey is tough without fighting. Ever been checked into the boards? You ever played one of those shifts against the top physical defenseman? Hockey's tough without fist fights. And what's number 5? Major League Baseball allows you to throw a small orb at a man's head for a variety of reasons. He hit a home run off me. I'm going to throw a ball at his eye. He jogged too slowly around the bases after jacking a ball off my crappy slider. I get a throw at him. What? Automatic ejection. If you make the major leagues, how about this? And a guy hits a home run off you. If you at any point in that season hit him, it's an ejection automatically. You're a major league pitcher. You're a major league pitcher. If Tom Brady, with people chasing him, can throw only 5 interceptions in a year, then a major league pitcher can avoid throwing at somebody's temple. These are the 5 things I do not get in American sports. The NFL preseason, 1-game baseball playoff, imbalanced college football schedules, fighting in hockey, and allowing people to throw at other people because, you know, I didn't like the pace he ran around the bases. Doesn't make any sense.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
This is one of my favorite times of the year, late August. My kids are in school. The house gets quieter. And I love watching these preseason games. I was with a buddy of mine last night, Ryan Russillo. Congrats to him. Just signed with the Ringer. Good dude. And we're watching football and we're talking about quarterbacks. I love this time of the year. I'm going to have a guest on in 5 minutes. Whose dad was on a Super Bowl staff, who I've relied on for years. I heard about him in local radio years ago. Lance Zierlein, now NFL draft analyst, NFL.com, one of the sharpest guys out there. And I bring him on a couple times a year, just love his work. And we're going to talk about all these young quarterbacks. It's a very exciting time for you as a consumer. You know, 5 of these teams have new quarterbacks. And we have a history in this league where guys get drafted in the 3rd, like Russell Wilson. They become Hall of Fame talents. Deshaun Watson went way too low. I mean, this is fun. If you love college football, and I do, and you love the NFL, then you have to love the draft. And this is kind of the first presentation for all of us publicly of the draft. Like, who's worth the pick? And I've told you before, I think Nick Chubb has a chance to be Rookie of the Year. I think everybody's paying attention to Baker. I think Nick Chubb was underdrafted, and he's going to be a great player at running back for Cleveland. But I want to say this. Odell Beckham, apparently, it looks like the Giants are renegotiating him and getting him a big contract. Now, for years and years, I have said I am not a big believer in giving big money to wide receivers because there's no scarcity of it. College football gives you a ton of them. And I don't see where big numbers for Odell Beckham translate to big wins. I've said before, if I could take five players to start my franchise, knowing they'd all be great, I'd take a quarterback, a left tackle, a pass rusher, an elite corner, and then I'd either go back to the offensive line or an interior defensive lineman like Aaron Donald. Those are my five guys. I'm not by the sixth pick. I think I'd go and try to get another corner or a great Mike linebacker in the middle. I'm not a big believer in wide receivers, but I've also been somebody that I've said for years, there's no nobility in stubborn. When information presents itself, you have to change. There's a reason pilots reroute. There's a reason they created Google Maps. There's an accident in the freeway. Take an exit. I'm not one of these guys. I hear it all the time, calling you flip-flop. No, I read a lot. And when I get new information, I have new opinions. There's no value to me to give you an old, stubborn opinion. Right now in the NBA, the mid-range jumper has very little value. Shoot threes. And the people who have adapted early to that, like Daryl Morey, LeBron James, Golden State, are winning titles and getting to the finals. The Boston Celtics are very good adapters on the three ball. And so I don't love wide receivers, but we got two things going on here. Okay, we got a catch rule that's just been tweaked that is a pro wide receiver rule now. We're going to have 400 catches this year, many of them touchdowns, that are going to be allowed that weren't allowed for the last decade. And I think Andy Reid sees that and says, give me Sammy Watkins. And I think Les Snead of the Rams sees that and says, get me Brandon Cooks. And so that's number one. We got a rule change. It is a pro wide receiver rule change. The second thing we have is a helmet rule is going to be enforced. It's not necessarily changed, but it's going to be enforced. What does that mean? Automatic first down. You don't think that's going to result in field goals and touchdowns? We have two major rule tweaks. They are both very pro wide receiver. That's why I had Bucky Brooks on the other day. He talked about who's getting the big money this offseason.
Right now, it's about the three Ps, passers, playmakers, and pass catchers. Teams are no longer investing big money in defensive stars because they know you can outscore people and win significant games. Just follow the money in the offseason.
Follow the money. Earl Thomas can't get it. Aaron Donald can't get it. Khalil Mack can't get it.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Coach of the Philadelphia Eagles, Doug Peterson. So you're probably not happy last night, and I read your quotes this morning. You weren't happy with Nick Foles. But then you wake up this morning, Doug, and you watch the film. So as a consumer, I watch you. You don't have your running backs. You didn't have several of them. A couple of defensive guys are out. You don't have like a left tackle, Jason Peters. You don't have a wide receiver. I'm watching and I'm thinking, what do I give a rip? They're well coached. They'll be good. What am I supposed to take with that performance last night? What do I take from it?
You really don't take much from it, quite honestly. And my comments, too, after the game, were not directed at Nick Foles. It was directed more at the offense. And part of our success was last year was not about one guy. It was about the entire team. So I just felt like our offensive performance in the first half, I mean, we had six possessions. We had two interceptions, two fumbles. We had a sack safety, and then we had a turnover on downs. That's unacceptable in the National Football League to have six possessions with that kind of result. So it's more about the offensive performance, but just like you alluded to in the beginning, we're without many of our starters on offense, and it's hard to get into any kind of a rhythm to get our quarterback in any kind of rhythm.
I see the Rams don't want to play Goff. They don't want to play Gurley. You know, Drew Brees doesn't want to play. Big Ben doesn't want to play in the preseason. I don't love the preseason. I'd rather see the Eagles play seven joint practices. Your quarterbacks don't get hit. You played in this league. In fact, you're one of only four people in league history who's been a Super Bowl winner as a player, as a coach. Ditka's one of those guys. I think Tom Flores, Tony Dungy. This preseason, when you're sitting there and you're writing out your lineups, is there part of you, Doug, that is thinking to yourself, I don't want to play this guy. It's preseason. I don't want to get him hurt. I mean, that has to go through your mind, doesn't it?
Well, it does. Any coach in this league thinks about that, you know, in preseason. You don't want to get any of your starters banged up, hurt, where they either miss a practice, a game, or possibly the start of the regular season. So, you know, it definitely crosses your mind. But at the same time, you're still trying to work timing. You're still trying to work execution, you know, and you're trying to see certain guys in certain situations. And it can be a little difficult at times to get that accomplished.
Yeah. If you could have more joint practices and two or few preseason games, you could vote today. You were the deciding vote. Would you vote for that?
I would. And being a former player, too, I think that the joint practices really bring out the best in the competition. You really see what you have. We did it a year ago with the Miami Dolphins and Adam Gase and had two really good practices in Philadelphia. And then, of course, we played them, you know, that week. But I think the league is leaning towards the joint practices. I really do. I don't like the fighting that's going on, though. That has to be addressed. But at the same time, I think you can get some quality work done against another opponent during training camp, because training camp is obviously long, and still get some good work done for your starters.
By the way, Nick Foles is certainly good enough to start for a handful of teams. I don't believe he is Carson Wentz, who's maybe the best young quarterback, well, since Andrew Luck, I would say. And both Andrew and he, a little dinged up, both coming back. Deshaun Watson's obviously young and very talented. But you know, when you kind of look at a Nick Foles, he decided to stay in Philly. And a lot of people are like, well, why didn't he go make a bunch of money? Can you take me inside that? Because he's going to be, if he doesn't start, he's the best backup in the league.
Well, and that's the thing is you know, go back to 2012 when I was on Andy Reid's staff and we drafted Nick Foles and brought him into Philadelphia. And then, of course, I leave and go to Kansas City, and now I have a chance to come back, and I have a chance to bring Nick Foles back. And he wanted to come back and be a part and be sort of tied in with me again and be reunited with me again. And then after the season we had last year, there was really no, you know, really not a hard decision to make. Nick wanted to stay in Philadelphia. He felt comfortable in Philadelphia. He understood his role. He knew he was, you know, a backup a year ago, possibly going to be a backup again this year, and he's comfortable in that role. So he's excited. Yeah, he could have probably gone and you know, made a lot of money. But you know what? I think where he's at in his career right now, it'd have to be the right situation, the right team in order for that to happen. And fortunately for us, I feel like we got one of the best quarterback rooms in the league.
You did something during the Super Bowl. You know, there's been a handful of plays in Super Bowl history that are just iconic. I always think, I'm old enough, I remember the Lynn Swan catch against the Cowboys and Mark Washington. You know, it's slow-mo and Bradshaw throws it down the field. And there are a handful of these. You did a play called the Philly Special. It's fourth. It's going into halftime. And it's one of the great plays of all time. I got to tell you, though, when you watch that and you go to the sidelines and Nick Foles says, Coach, let's run Philly Special. Was there part of you that thought, if this thing doesn't go right, this is going to end up being on a blooper tape somewhere?
Colin, it never once crossed my mind, that thought. When he suggested the play, I didn't bat an eye. I had so much confidence in what he suggested. I had so much confidence in the guys executing the play that I just looked up and locked eyes with him and said, "That's it. That's the play we're going with." And it was the right time. Great opportunity on the 1 yard line, fourth and goal in the Super Bowl. And Colin, listen, I had no fear about calling the play. I trusted my players in executing that play, and obviously it worked to perfection.
How many times you do that in practice? 10, 20, 30? I mean, when did you wrap it up?
So go back. We played the Minnesota Vikings in the conference championship, you know, 2 weeks prior to the Super Bowl, and we actually put the play in that week. I was hoping to get it called in the Minnesota game and didn't get it called. But I can remember the first three times that we called it in practice, Trey Burton – airmailed the ball over Nick's head and Trey's a former high school quarterback. He's a baseball player at the University of Florida. He's a tremendous athlete. And he airmailed the ball over Nick's head the first three times. And I'm thinking, there's no way I can call this play. I have no confidence in this play. And we just kept working it and working it and working it. And then we kept it in for the Super Bowl. It just worked. It worked to perfection.
God, that's incredible. So when you know, I'm watching all these young quarterbacks. And I've said before, when you give me a number one or a number two pick at quarterback, nothing against the Mazda, but I want a Maserati. I want a Cam. I want a Luck. I want a Wentz. Go back to Carson Wentz, because you get the job, and you guys, there was a little chaos, and then you take over the organization, and you're riding the ship, and you guys get Carson Wentz. Was there a moment for you, Coach, a practice, a moment, a tape, a drive home, when you just knew, oh, God, this kid's special?
There was a moment in training camp that year, that our first year, where he eluded the rush and did one of his sort of that Washington. Remember the clip of the Washington Redskins last year opening day? He made that amazing scramble he kind of ducked and spun out. Well, he did one of those type of moves in training camp his first year as a rookie and completed the ball down the field. And at that point, you're just kind of going, this kid's got something to him. He's going to be a special kid in this league, a special talent, and a mighty fine quarterback. And, you know, of course, he was young then, and he continued to grow, and he got so much better last year, and he's continuing to grow and getting stronger. And sky's the limit with this guy. And I'm just so excited that we were able to pick him as my first quarterback in my first draft 2 years ago.
By the way, your buddy Andy Reid doesn't have a Super Bowl. You've been coaching for an hour and a half, and you got a Super Bowl. And I know Andy loves you and has so much respect and called the owner of the Eagles and said, hire this guy. And it's not that long ago you were playing, and you got a new book out called Fearless. So I said this yesterday on the show, and I was kind of poking at you, and everybody at Fox defended you. And I said, listen, I said, Doug Peterson's, yeah, he's just a kid. He's just got out of playing, and now he's got a book out, and Philadelphia's talking a bunch, and I blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, man, they're making a lot of noise. Do you worry that these teams, they don't go back to the Super Bowl? People can get lazy. Do you worry, Doug, of all the spotlight and all the parades, and now everybody's talking about the Eagles? How do you make sure you're totally focused and you feel like an underdog at camp?
Well, you know, the biggest thing for me is just exactly that, the underdog mentality. And I think one of the things that I've got two things going for me that really helped me keep this team grounded and rooted. And one is I've got about five or six players on my team right now that are coming off of injury. I got Jason Peters, Darren Sproles, Chris Maragos, Jordan Hicks. I got Carson Wentz. I got these guys coming off of injury that were starters for us a year ago that missed out on that game. They're coming back with a hunger, with a drive, with a motivation to try to get the Eagles back to that game again this year, and it keeps the team grounded. The second thing that I feel I've got going for me is I went into back-to-back Super Bowls as a player in Green Bay. You know, we beat the Patriots in Super Bowl 31 and then went back again in Super Bowl 32 as the favorites against the Denver Broncos. And I remember we lost that Super Bowl, and I remember so many things about that game and really the events leading up to that game. And, you know, the things that, you feel a little bit confident, a little bit full of yourself. You kind of read your press clippings a little bit.
Sure.
And I just sort of said, hey, this year, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to allow myself to do that. I'm not going to allow this team to do that. And I saw it during OTAs, Colin, where we had everybody but two players at attending every one of our OTA practices. The only two were Michael Bennett and Darren Sproles, two veteran players that, you know what, they've played a lot of football in this league. They're Pro Bowl players. I get it. If they don't want to be there, that's fine. Everybody else was there, the Fletcher Cox, you know, Malcolm Jenkins, all these guys were there and working. And so that was a real indicator for me that this team is humble, they're hungry, and they're ready to defend the championship this season.
His book is called Fearless. There's the picture of it, how an underdog becomes a champion. Well, good luck to you. It is between you and Howie and Carson Wentz. This is a leadership league. You got it rolling. You got some veteran players coming back. Doug, I love that you took 15 minutes for our show today. Thank you so much.
Colin, thank you so much for having me on.
The book is Fearless, How an Underdog Becomes a Champion. You know, I'm watching that Philly special play. And God, I mean, that's how it, seriously, the throw was perfect. That handoff was perfect. The fact that in practice he had concerns, and then in the moment of crisis, they run it perfect. The throw is perfect. Yeah, the Saints onside kick. Now, that was crazy. Yeah, no, I mean, the problem with trick plays, now remember, this is a fourth down. If you sail it over his head in a second, nobody remembers that play if you score. But if you sail that puppy over his head on a fourth, and that's Doug's first Super Bowl as a coach, God. And then the Patriots were just lost. They didn't have anybody out there in that space. That is amazing.